You are listening to a recording of the Open Society Foundations, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Я хотел бы поприветствовать всех и просто представить делегацию Кыргызстана. Я сам, значит, постоянно представитель Кыргызской Республики при ООН, Кадыров Талабек Тургубаевич. Я хотел бы представить сразу нашу делегацию.
Это... And I would like to thank you for your attendance, and I would like to introduce you to the members of this delegation from Kyrgyzstan. And first of all, I would like to introduce myself.
Кадыров. Постоянный представитель при ООН.
And I'm a permanent representative of the of Kyrgyzstan with the United Nations.
Глава делегации – это депутат Джор Кенеша, депутат парламента. Значит, Сабиров.
And also I would like to present Josh Sabirov, who is the member of parliament.
Так, члены делегации, значит, заведующий отделом аппарата президента Кыргызской Республики Карыбаева Мира.
And also I would like to present to introduce you to Карыбаева Мира, who is the chair of presidential apparatus.
The department.
Of the department.
Значит, Мамыров тоже заведующий отделом аппарата президента.
And also Мамыров, who is the chair of the department of presidential department.
Кабак, значит, эксперт по вопросам прав человека.
Also Кабак, who is an expert the issues of human rights.
Как мы обычно говорим, представитель гражданского общества.
As we usually refer to him as the representative of civil society.
Ну и наш посол Кыргызской Республики в США Джумалиев.
And also our ambassador of the Republic of Kyrgyzstan Джумалиев.
Мы, значит, организуем это мероприятие совместно с открытым обществом. И я с удовольствием предоставляю слово и в качестве модератора Майклу.
And we have organized this event along with the Open Society, and I would like, it's my pleasure to pass the microphone to the moderator, who's Mike.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador. And thank you to everyone who was able to come out at relatively short notice to our event today. The event that sort of precipitated this one was the release quite recently of the report of the Kyrgyzstan Inquiry Commission at the beginning of this month. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar, this was an independent report done by an international commission headed by Kimmo Kiljunen, who was a Finnish member of the Parliamentary Assembly of the OSCE, into the violence that occurred in southern Kyrgyzstan almost 1 year ago. In June of 2010. The report, often referred to as the Kiljunen report, is one of many reports and investigations into the violence that have taken place since then, including no fewer than three domestic commissions within Kyrgyzstan and three reports by various other international NGOs. But I think it's the report that was awaited with the greatest anticipation and in some quarters trepidation. The report has been issued, and it is quite lengthy. Just to summarize some of its key findings and to give a very brief overview, the report, in its analysis of the violence, noted that while both communities, ethnic Kyrgyz and ethnic Uzbeks, were affected by the violence, the Uzbeks suffered disproportionately in terms of loss of life and destruction of property. The report also pointed a finger of blame at the security services and the interim government for, in the view of the authors, failing to prevent and contain the violence. It made a number of recommendations as well, including that the government of Kyrgyzstan take a very strong stand versus chauvinism and nationalist extremism. They even went so far as to suggest that the country's name be officially changed from the Kyrgyz Republic to the Republic of Kyrgyzstan. That the government of Kyrgyzstan consider adding crimes against humanity into its criminal code, and that the government consider the formation of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Now, these findings have generated a great deal of discussion, a great deal of debate, a great deal of controversy in some quarters, so much so that as of yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, the Parliament of Kyrgyzstan voted to declare the head of the commission, Mr. Killian himself, persona non grata in the country. So obviously it's a report that has generated a great deal of emotion on all sides. The purpose of today's discussion, then, is to consider the implications of the report, and in general to look forward, to look at ways in which Kyrgyzstan can find ways to achieving justice for those who suffered in the violence, and perhaps equally, if not more importantly, promoting reconciliation, so to see to it that these events do not happen again. Now, to guide us through our discussion, we are very, very privileged to have such a high-ranking delegation from Kyrgyzstan with us today. Mr. Ambassador has presented them. We'll also be joined by Rachel Denber, whom I think many of you here know from Human Rights Watch. I should point out that Human Rights Watch was the author, I think, of the first, if I'm not mistaken, right, international report by an international NGO very soon after the violence. And by Marcy Mirsky from International Center for Transitional Justice, to give their perspectives as well, and some thoughts on again, ways to address the issues that came out of last summer's violence. So the order in which we have things right now would be first Mr. Sabirov, yes, followed by Ms. Karabayeva, Mr. Mamurov, Mr. Kabak, then Marcy and Rachel. And if there are no objections to this order, okay, then I'm very happy to give up the floor to Mr. Ravshanbek Sabirov, Member of Parliament of the Kyrgyz Republic.
Спасибо. Уважаемые участники сегодняшней нашей дебаты, прежде всего хочу поблагодарить за то, что очень пристально смотрите, очень пристально наблюдаете за тем, что происходит в Кыргызстане. Нам очень приятно то, что на сегодняшний день общественность живо интересуется. И у нас единственной целью это чтобы дать здесь брифинг и объясниться по Международной независимой комиссии по отчету Международной независимой комиссии 2010 года, которые произошли на юге Кыргызстана.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank all of you very much for participating in this event today. And also, I would like to thank all of you for paying such close attention to what is happening in Kyrgyzstan. And also, we see that the society's interest in the problem is pretty significant. And the goal of this meeting today and this event today is for us to give a briefing on and to explain the situation and to tell you about the report of 2010, the International Independent Commission report dated that relates to 2010.
Во-первых, я бы хотел бы сказать, что 2010 год для Кыргызстана был очень трудным годом, потому что у нас сначала произошли 7 апреля революция, потом спровоцированный межэтнический конфликт на юге Кыргызстана.
Well, first of all, I would like to say that the year 2010 was a very hard year for Kyrgyzstan. First of all, it was the events of April the 7th, the revolution that took place on April 7th, and then that provoked those inter-ethnical conflicts that were provoked.
Кроме этого, я сразу хочу сказать, что 2010 год демократическое преобразование Кыргызстана, цена была очень высока, но несмотря на это, мы, народ Кыргызстана, провел общенародный референдум по изменению Конституции Кыргызской Республики и прозрачные, честные, демократические выборы парламента Кыргызстана.
Well, if we look back at 2010, we would see a lot of democratic changes. At the same time, those changes, the price that was paid for those changes was very high. Regardless of that, people of Kyrgyzstan were able to participate in the process of constitutional election and the process of Kyrgyz Republic.
Когда нам было трудно, мы очень хорошо помним, как правительство Соединенных Штатов Америки и народ Америки нам очень помогли и в материальном, и в моральном плане, за что огромная благодарность правительству Америки и народу Америки.
And also, we remember that although this was a very hard process, we remember that the government of the United States, as well as the people of the United States, gave us so much moral and both financial and moral support and helped us through this moment. And we would like to thank you very much for that.
У нас уже было ряд встреч, но здесь вот фондом Дейла Карнеги, Национальным демократическим институтом, Конгрессом США, Совете национальной безопасности США мы встречались с господином Робертом Блейком, господином Познером. Также они очень положительно высказываются о том, что Кыргызстан запустил международную независимую комиссию.
Also, we have had a number of meetings, of high-profile meetings, at Dale Carnegie National Democratic Institute, as well as Congress. And the meetings we had were with Robert Blake and Mr. Posner. And we would like to say that they expressed their a high regard in terms of our decision to commence this international independent commission.
Господин Ким Маккеллинин выполнил очень объемную и сложную работу. Мы это правительство Кыргызстана и парламент, мы признаем обязательно, но также надо сказать, что в отчете в некоторых местах есть существенные пробелы.
And Mr. Timoteyan, we would like to say that both the government and the parliament of Kyrgyzstan, we see that the work that has been done is very hard and big and of high volume work. At the same time, we would like to say that in that report, we've seen some gaps that have to be filled.
Как выше упомянули, на сегодняшний день в парламенте Кыргызстана тоже была создана депутатская комиссия, которая на сегодняшний день и обсуждает также заключение международной независимой комиссии. Также парламент уже начал обсуждать свое заключение на сегодняшний день.
And as I've mentioned above, the members of parliament and members of the commission started to discuss this international independent commission and the findings of this international independent commission.
У нас, значит, на сегодняшний день около 10, значит, заключения разного рода. Это национальная комиссия, заключение национальной комиссии, потом заключение омбудсмена Кыргызской Республики, потом, значит, международная независимая комиссия, депутатская комиссия. Их около 10. Я так думаю, мы, приехав домой, и здесь мы услышали очень хорошие, значит, консультации, которые нам подсказали и Национальным демократическим институтом тоже, что мы по приезду обязательно создадим межведомственную комиссию из авторитетных людей, и среди них будут депутаты парламента, также этнические, национальные, культурные центры, авторитетные люди от среди узбекского части населения, и будем притворять их в практическую, значит, жизнь.
Also, I would like to say that as of today, we have seen 10 findings of different sorts. First of all, the National Commission and Obiceyanov, Kyrgyz Republic, members of government commissions. So all in all, it's 10 findings. And after we came back from the meetings we had at the National Democratic Institute, we felt like we had received a very good consultation, and we heard a very useful advice. And we would like, upon our return home, we would like to organize a commission that would account high-profile persons and would count members of a parliament, representative of ethnical national centers, and also the count of Uzbeki representatives will also be one of this one of our goals. So that's the goal for us.
Я еще раз хочу подчеркнуть, это межэтнический конфликт был спровоцированным третьими силами, как в заключении некоторые отмечали. Потому что межэтнический конфликт такого рода у нас никогда в независимом Кыргызстане не было. И по сегодняшний день тоже у нас в парламенте есть четыре, значит, представителя узбекской национальности. Я сам по национальности являюсь этническим таджиком. Я как представитель парламента другой национальности. Поэтому и вот эти, значит, конфликт был спровоцированным.
Also, this inter-ethnical conflict that we saw, it was provoked by a third party. That's how it happened. And I would like to say that never before had it taken place, had we seen that kind of conflict. And as for the parliament today, the way it looks today, I would like to say that we have four members of parliament that are of Uzbeki origin. And if we're talking about me personally, I would like to say that I'm an ethnical Tajik. And this is how the structure looks today.
Значит, сейчас я тогда передам слово Мире Аскеровне Карабаевой для подробного выступления. Спасибо.
Now I would like to let Мира Аскеровна Карабаева, I would like to let her hold her speech.
Я скажу только несколько слов, чтобы вот обозначить некоторые основные острые моменты, и потом, мне кажется, важно оставить время для вопросов и ответов.
I would like to first of all outline a few basic acute moments issues, and then I think it would be important to let some to leave some time for questions.
Как отметил Майкл, отчет Международной независимой комиссии получил очень большой резонанс у нас внутри страны. Очень большие дискуссии, острые дискуссии, но это было ожидаемо. В принципе, мы знали, что такая острая реакция будет.
First of all, I would like to say, as Michael said, the report of an international independent commission had drawn a lot of attention within our country. There were a lot of discussions, sharp discussions, acute discussions, as it was to be expected.
Ожидаемо, потому что это первое исследование на постсоветском пространстве такого рода. Никогда таких прецедентов не было. И граждане нашей страны прекрасно помнят те случаи, когда в соседних странах в случае подобного рода проблем, говорим ли мы это о Чечне в России или о андижанских событиях, власти страны не открывали своих границ для независимых исследований, и Кыргызстан стал первой страной, что вызвало, с одной стороны, у части общества понимание, потому что люди тоже хотели знать, что же на самом деле произошло, но большинство общества восприняло это очень болезненно, потому что после этого конфликта Кыргызстан и так в мировых средствах массовой информации выглядел как такая достаточно не очень, скажем так, привлекательная страна, да? А после этого исследования возникла вот эта вот такая очень тяжелая травма для национального самосознания, и вот те проявления, которые мы сейчас видим, это вот как раз отражает эту сложную ситуацию.
Well, as it was expected, the first investigation, this was the first inquiry of this sort on the territory of the former Soviet Union. And the citizens of the neighboring countries, citizens of other countries such as Chechnya that had seen similar conflicts, they had not seen what our people saw, because those countries, they did not open borders and they did not invite international commissions. We did that, and people, some people of the country, they understood it and they greeted it. At the same time, most of the population of the country took this as something very painful and traumatic, because Kyrgyzstan was already seen in the media as a rather unattractive country, and now this kind of attention was drawn, and again, it was traumatic for national identity as well.
Ну, при этом необходимо сказать о том, о таком также факте, что несмотря на ужас произошедшего, нужно не забывать, что стране самостоятельно, без внешней помощи, о которой Кыргызстан взывал, о которой просил в те дни, удалось буквально за 4-5 дней самостоятельно локализовать конфликт, остановить насилие и предотвратить гуманитарную катастрофу.
Well, regardless, despite the horror of what had taken place, without outside help, although Kyrgyzstan, when it was going through it, it was asking for that help, it was crying out for the help. Despite the fact that there was no such help, Kyrgyzstan, in a matter of 4 or 5 days, was able to localize the conflict itself and to prevent humanitarian catastrophe.
И, видимо, этот конфликт, он должен стать предметом дискуссий, в том числе и о возможностях тех международных организаций, которые призваны по мандату, должны помогать в таких случаях. Однако оказалось, что этих мандатов явно недостаточно, и процедуры помощи недостаточно проработаны.
And also what this conflict showed was that it became the target of discussions about the possibility of international organizations to help when conflicts like this take place, as they are mandated to do. And so we realized that there's no enough decrees of that sort for international organizations to help when conflicts like this strike.
Значит, еще одна деталь, на которую хотелось бы обратить внимание, вот почему такие острые дискуссии были вызваны, потому что само описание причин конфликта и контекста, в котором конфликт происходил, выглядит несколько ограниченным. Потому что временное правительство, несмотря на то, что одной фразой сказано, что оно только 2 месяца назад получило власть, тем не менее описано так, как будто бы Кыргызстан – это страна с сильными институтами государства, как будто в этой стране были дееспособные, адекватно обученные, экипированные силовые структуры, как будто бы в этой стране в последние годы было уважение к правам человека и достоинству человека, и вот как бы требовалось от временного правительства предпринять вот такие адекватные меры. Но вопрос в том, что ни ресурсов, ни возможности принять адекватные меры в тот период не было, по той простой причине, что центральная власть еще не контролировала все регионы. И в южных регионах была острая борьба за власть между реваншистами и сторонниками временного правительства. И эта ситуация, она была очень острой, потому что особенно в среднем уровне управления, в том числе в силовых структурах, находились еще сторонники прошлого режима.
Well, one of the details we have to draw attention to is those acute discussions as to why this happened, the reasons of why the conflict happened, as well as the context of the conflict. And so these discussions and this information is limited. The thing is that the interim government, when it came to power, it only came to power 2 months before. And so, but it looked like it was expected to do more than it could. Government institutions, they were not as if it was expected from interim government to take real control of the situation, as if government institutions were working very efficiently, and as if security force agencies were also working efficiently, as if human rights were respected. Such things as dignity and human integrity were respected. So the situation was, however, that there was no such resources in the hands of a new government and no such possibilities. And especially if we look at the situation that happened in the south of the country.
Также есть ряд деталей, которые недостаточно прописаны, которые могли бы дополнить картину, в частности, действия, в описании в действии военных не сказано ничего о том, что именно военные обеспечивали гуманитарные коридоры для безопасного прохода беженцев.
Also would like to mention this detail, the actions of military, the actions of military. Military was actually doing the humanitarian aspect of it, which meant for refugees they were providing this humanitarian corridor for refugees.
Не описана роль криминалитета и наркотрафика, хотя всем известно, что вот эта зона Ферганской долины, это как раз зона самого активного наркотрафика, и это влияние, передел сфер после падения власти, связанные криминальные и криминальные структуры наркобарона, они как раз использовали эту ситуацию для того, чтобы переделить между собой сферы влияния.
Criminality, also the aspect of criminality and the fact that major drug trafficking was taking place because Ferganskaya Valley is one of those major drug trafficking areas where the narco heads of this trafficking were trying to divide the territories according to where they had authority.
Ну и самое главное, что мне хотелось бы сказать, рекомендации, которые есть в документе, а уже сейчас тщательно изучены, уже произведена определенная приоритизация того, что мы будем выполнять в первую очередь. Причем мы будем делать план по реализации рекомендаций, который будет включать в себя рекомендации не только этой комиссии, но и других отчетов и комиссий международных организаций, авторитетных, таких как Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International и всех других, чтобы в комплексе их рассмотреть. И мы, как сказано в этом документе, просим содействия Управления Верховного комиссара по правам человека, ООН, а также Верховного комиссара ОБСЕ по правам нацменьшинств в оказании помощи нам в мониторинге, оценке того, как мы будем это выполнять. И нами действительно будет создана комиссия пока мы последнее название еще не придумали, но мы для себя называем ее комиссия по примирению. И, да, и Кыргызстан, как никогда, в общем, твердо стоит на намерении выполнять свои обязательства, особенно в части прав, нарушения прав человека.
One of the most important aspects of looking at this recommendation is that to review them and to look at them and also to see which ones are which in terms of what are what our priorities are if we look at these recommendations. And we plan on working with these recommendations and not only by looking at them that came from this particular commission, but also that came from the commissions commenced by and completed by Amnesty International, by Human Rights Watch, by these commissions. And also would like to ask a Chief Commissar of Human Rights Council as well as OBSE for their input as well, and also to ask them and you to help us with monitoring when it's actually happening, when we try to implement this recommendation. And also this commission will be done. We will organize this another commission as well, and we don't have the official name for this commission, but for now we would like to call this commission the Commission of Reconciliation.
Ну и последнее. Фактически в стране начались президентские выборы, уже, хотя они не объявлены, но тем не менее политический процесс сильно актуализирован. И нам бы хотелось, что события прошлого года не повторились, а анализ событий прошлого года не стал инструментом для тех политиков, которые хотели бы использовать этот отчет и другие отчеты как инструмент борьбы против своих политических оппонентов и для обострения ситуации.
Basically, what we see, what we can see in the country right now is that the presidential election has already taken place, although it hasn't been announced officially yet. But still, what we see, the processes that we see in the country, they're the processes of presidential election. And we would like to, not have a kind of situation to take place where the opposition of the government, those powers that will want to come to power after this new election takes place, we would not want this force to use this event that had taken place, as well as the findings of these commissions, as an instrument to fight their political opposition.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Karabayeva. The next speaker will be Mr. Erkinbek Mamurov, head of the Department for Legality of the Office of the President of the Kyrgyz Republic.
Спасибо. Мой коллега Мира Карабаева достаточно подробно осветила позицию правительства по отчету Международной комиссии. И чтобы не повторяться, что было сказано, наверное, перейдем к вопросам и ответам. Если есть вопросы, мы готовы ответить на ваши вопросы.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank Mira Karabayeva for giving us this her speech and telling us about the position of the government with regards to this commission and the findings of the commissions. And I would like to ask if there are any questions, and we would be happy to answer them.
Oh, a suggestion, if I may. Just in the interest of time, I think it might make sense if we have all speakers first give their presentations, and then we go to questions and answers. I'm sure people have a lot of questions. And I want to make sure that first of all, that there is enough time for discussion, but secondly, that all speakers have a chance. So if there are no objections, Mr. Mahmoud, if you have no, if there's something you wish to say, please, please do. Otherwise,
Хорошо. Okay. Тогда я по правовой части остановлюсь. В отчете комиссии Келлинина указано, что в событиях июня 2010 года не было геноцида и военного преступления. С этим правительство согласно, об этом правительство говорило и до работы Международной комиссии.
Well, first of all, speaking of this commission, the report of this commission that reflect the events of June of 2010, the report states that there was no genocide or war crimes, and we would like to say that the government agrees with this position.
Вместе с тем, в отчете указывается, что отдельные деяния могут быть квалифицированы как преступления против человечества.
At the same time, as it's indicated in the report, some of the actions, some separate actions that had taken place, they qualify, they could be called crimes against humanity.
С таким утверждением комиссии правительство не согласно, и свое несогласие правительство обосновало в комментариях к отчету Международной комиссии.
This kind of statements, our government does not agree with this statements, and we have officially made this, indicated this disagreement in the commentary to the report.
Однако несогласие правительства с выводами Международной комиссии относительно того, что некоторые деяния могут подпадать под понятие преступления против человечества, не означает о том, что преступления, которые были совершены в ходе июньских событий, останутся без расследования и виновные лица не будут привлечены к ответственности. Все виновные лица, которые совершили какие-либо деяния, подпадающие под понятие преступления, будут привлекаться к уголовной ответственности. В настоящее время в этом направлении правительством ведется работа.
Well, the disagreement, although we disagree with the report, with the findings of the report, our government disagrees with the findings of the report that relate to the fact that a crime against humanity had been committed. But still, it does not mean, this disagreement does not mean that we're not going to investigate the June crimes, and we're not going to bring all the parties guilty of those crimes to justice. And we would like to say that we're committed to working on this, and our government as well, to bring the everyone who was guilty of crimes during those events, to bring them to justice.
Также в отчете указывалось о том, что имеет место незаконное задержание и использование недозволенных методов приема при расследовании преступлений.
Also, it was indicated in the report that such things had taken place as unlawful detention as well as unlawful methods of interrogations, and we would like to say that
правительство осознает, что такого рода действия имели место. И в связи с этим принимает меры для исключения подобного рода действий со стороны сотрудников правоохранительных органов.
Our government realizes, acknowledges that those actions took place, and we would like to prevent those actions, to prevent the happening of these actions commenced by, to, that could be executed by representatives of the force. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mamudov. Moving now to Mr. Dmitry Kabak, human rights activist, to give his perspective.
Большое. Ну, я думаю, что, во-первых, я как бы хотел поблагодарить здесь правительство, которые решили также в состав делегации включить представителей гражданского общества. Я думаю, это хорошая традиция, которая в Кыргызстане уже закладывалась, и сейчас мы видим, что это работает. Я бы откомментировал.
First of all, thank you for. I would like to thank the government for including into the body of this delegation representatives of civil societies, and this it's a kind of good tradition that we have seen have been had been developed in Kyrgyzstan.
Что касается вопросов, которые идут из сферы прав человека, думаю, что у любой классической правозащитной организации будут, наверное, выводы одинаковые, если это касается отчета Международной комиссии.
And also, when we're talking about human rights organization, this aspect, then if we're talking about a classical human rights organizations, it would agree with the findings of this commission.
Ну, я бы хотел сказать, что работа, которая была проведена Международной комиссией, она заслуживает уважения, так как проливает свет на многие обстоятельства и наряду с другими докладами восстанавливает обстоятельства, которые нужны в том числе для истории, для восстановления хронологии событий, для анализа и для дальнейшего развития.
And also the work commenced and completed by International Commission sheds light on a lot of aspects, and those aspects and those findings and results are important with respect to history, restoration of the chronology of the events, as well as so we could draw some conclusions for the future.
Очень методологически было правильно выдержано позиция, где государству предоставили возможность дать свой отзыв. И поэтому нужно рассматривать, что оба документа, отчет Международной комиссии плюс комментарии правительства, являются единым документом, потому что они позволяют сбалансировать определенные позиции или, наоборот, дополнить.
And also, methodologically, if we look at the methodology of this report, we would like to say that it's a very good, successful kind of methodology that was used because government was able to give its feedback. So it's not just the report, the findings of the commission, independent commission, but it's also the feedback, the commentary from the government. And so we see these two aspects of this report as one structure.
Наверное, нужно помнить, с какой сложностью удалось эту комиссию все-таки запустить. И мы знаем, что было очень серьезное сопротивление. И как раз-таки какие-то, может быть, сложности, недостатки, упущения могли быть вызваны в том числе с отсроченным характером запуска. То есть то, что он был отложен на длительное время, поэтому очевидцы какие-то могли уже изменить свое отношение, не всегда желали проливать свет на какие-то обстоятельства, либо иногда какие-то данные могли теряться, то есть люди, к сожалению, со временем что-то упускают, и я думаю, это тоже могло повлиять.
And also there was a big difficulty when this commission was being commenced, a lot of opposition to the commencement of this resistance to the commission commission, and probably there were some gaps and some imperfections that took place while this commission was being commenced, and also there was some delay with when this commission started its actual function, and because of this opposition and also some imperfections, as I've mentioned before.
Может быть, если сейчас какие-то документы, ну, говорю, уже в комиссию это не вошло, будут проливать больше свет на состояние, которое было в тот момент в Кыргызстане с органами, с институтами власти, это могло бы тоже помочь, поскольку, скажем прямо, местное самоуправление, местная власть в Южном регионе, она не признавала после смены власти президента. И, или, например, когда местная власть на местах считала себя теперь, ну, назовем это, не знаю, может быть, некорректно будет звучать, царьками, полноценной властью, не признающей никого. И, в принципе, страна находилась на состоянии вообще развала. То есть мы видели разделение страны фактически пополам, и даже, может быть, некоторые действия, которые бы мы хотели, чтобы государство предпринимало, они могли нанести урон даже государственности.
And also that some documents that did not become a part of this commission, would like to mention those documents and the governmental institutions. And also I would like to say that some local government, representatives of local government in the southern region, they did not acknowledge this presidential change, the change of power. And so they saw themselves as, I would say, small czars who did not acknowledge the change and who did not acknowledge everyone, the authority of everyone. And so what we saw was basically almost a falling apart of the country when it was being split, divided into two. And so it was on the brink of falling apart. And so the issue of state identity was also at risk.
Например, представителям гражданского общества пришлось встречаться и членами временного правительства, и с бывшим руководством, то есть людьми, которые раньше возглавляли отдельные органы. И скажем прямо, мы иногда буквально напоминали об ответственности этих людей, которым граждане доверяли и доверяют. Способны ли они все-таки пересмотреть позицию, поехать на юг и взять командование милицией, например?
And also there were representatives of civil society held meetings with not just interim government, but also some members of former government, and reminded them of the responsibility they had before their people to be responsible.
Лично я вместе с несколькими представителями, в том числе с Виталием Пономаревым из российского мемориала, и другими коллегами выезжал на юг практически каждый месяц, и вот мы видели каждый раз новые изменения ситуации. И я полагаю, что если бы вот любой доклад строился на хронологии, то он бы мог более корректно оценивать какие-то вещи, потому что ситуация каждый раз была разная.
Also, I would like to say to what I just mentioned, so we had meetings with these representatives of government, and we wanted them to come to the south, to come out to the south and see of the country and to see the situation for themselves. And as part of this process, what happened was that from the Russian side, Mr. Vitaly Ponomarev and myself and other representatives, we went to the south and to see the changes of the situation. And also, I think another important aspect of this, of commencing conducting this report in the commission, is to keep in mind the chronology of events, because I think if we look at the events in terms of their chronology as they were taking place, it would help to give a clear and more defined view of the situation.
Я думаю, что, конечно, авторам, наверное, было сложно описать эту динамику и выбрать, насколько широкий период времени они должны задокументировать, но это проблема любого автора, любого доклада. То есть, с другой стороны, я всегда всем предлагаю, напишите свой доклад, если кто в состоянии.
And also the authors of this report, it was hard for them to describe this, keeping in mind what I've just said. And so the dynamics of what had happened, and they also had to make a decision on the scope of the events, how many of them they wanted to describe, and how much of this whole situation they wanted to include into their reports. But I think all authors, they face this problem.
У меня еще пару комментариев. Вот я помню, как гражданское общество наряду с властью пытались решать вопросы и задачи, которые возникали. Например, собрали добровольцев, разгружая для разгрузки грузов в аэропорту Манас гуманитарной помощи. В том числе пытались выстроить каналы доставки гуманитарной помощи наряду с органами власти или вместе. И очень много этих примеров, я думаю, что они будут когда-то задокументированы и позволят рассматривать как Кыргызстан, как нацию, которые как раз-таки пытались решать актуальные задачи в тот момент, когда, я напомню, государство иногда оказалось, что его просто нет или оно очень ослаблено.
And also the civil society along with the government wanted to solve problems, and there were instances where volunteers went to the airport to unload deliveries, various deliveries at the airport, as well as providing some delivery of humanitarian help. And I think that all of this has to be documented, and this would help the process.
Последний комментарий касается, наверное, вот того решения, которое вы слышали, что парламент решил признать автора доклада, значит, персона нон грата. Насколько это вообще входит в компетенцию депутатов, насколько это решение соответствует на самом деле самым, может быть, таким демократичным инициативам, которые происходят в стране при участии президента, при участии правительства и как раз к международным обязательствам в области прав человека. Я думаю, что еще это отдельный вопрос. Не стоит его пока рассматривать.
And also the parliament asked to qualify the person who had made this report as a persona non grata, and so members of government we still have to see in terms of how this action aligns with the rules and with the principles of conducting such reports, and we think that we still have to give it more time and have to not rush to conclusions and decide this as a separate issue.
Okay. All right, thank you very much, Dima. Moving on then, next is Marcy Mersky of the International Center for Transitional Justice. I should point out that ICTJ also has issued a report on the applicability of transitional justice approaches to Kyrgyzstan. Now, this report the research for this report was done in the aftermath of the April events before the June events happened, so the focus was largely on dealing with issues that stemmed from the fall of the Bakiyev regime. But nonetheless, I think a lot of the lessons and the information and the suggestions that it makes have relevance. So, Marcy.
Thank you all very much. It's really quite a pleasure to be at the same table with such a distinguished panel, and a pleasure to have the opportunity to share some ideas about ways forward, really. As Michael said, we did an assessment of the potential for using a transitional justice approach in Kyrgyzstan, really around the April events, and looking at cycles of authoritarian rule, of authoritarianism, and then revolt. And if there was something in a transitional justice approach that could be useful to help break that cycle. Today I won't be addressing those findings, and I'll speak very briefly because I know people have many questions. But I did want to stress, and I'll try to speak slowly, and if I go too fast, just so you know. Okay. And I'm sorry that I don't speak Russian despite my grandparents. I think I wanted to emphasize three or four things around this. One is I also, I've participated myself as a staff person in three international commissions of inquiry. And I wanted to, what Dimitri just said about all authors face the many problems that are in this, you know, that of what to say and how to say it in the most constructive way possible. That's always an enormous challenge in these commissions because they work in terribly controversial events. If they weren't controversial and difficult to take apart and understand, there would be no need for a commission of inquiry. Okay? So that's part of what is going on. And I wanted to say, too, I think listening that it was actually quite a courageous step by the government to ask for an independent international commission of inquiry. It's not something that countries are often anxious to do, and I think that was indeed a very important step to take at that time. I wanted to say, too, that I think it's in my experience with, and the experience of ICTJ more generally, with reports of this nature or reports of truth commissions, is that their greatest value is in their instrument, is being an instrument for public discussion. And that means all of the stakeholders. And it doesn't mean just one round. It means really opening up a safe space for all of the stakeholders in the issue. So that means government, it means judicial and law enforcement authorities, it means the victims themselves, it means community leaders and political leaders, civil society groups, and the public in general to be able to delve into the report on those things with which there's initial agreement and on those things with which there is initial rejection. Perhaps in that debate, those opinions will change. And that it's very important, and it's not something to put in a drawer and go away. Mm-hmm. And we have seen many times in which controversial reports are simply shelved, or where the entire report is delegitimized over points which may be secondary. Mm-hmm. And it's very important not to let that happen. You have an enormous opportunity here to take the findings of this report, to learn from it and go forward if there's the calm to take that hard look at things. So I just wanted to say a few things about, I won't address the fact-finding part. I wanted to spend a little bit, just a few comments on the recommendations of the commission. But before doing that, I wanted to say too that what the events of June, and especially the aftermath that's in the report, that's reported on in the report, the ways in which the different institutions of the state responded to the events, is one of the key elements to be addressed, because they have a major issue. They have a major impact on questions of trust, and trust in two domains: trust between the communities of Kyrgyzstan, between Kyrgyz and Uzbeks, and between the ethnic, and that's such a fragile and important part of keeping the nation together. So there's an issue of how these events and the aftermath affected trust among citizens, all of the same country. And another dimension of trust as well, which is what ICTJ speaks about always as civic trust. That is to say, the trust that there needs to be between citizens and their institutions of the state. So the trust of citizens in the judicial system, in the courts, in the prosecutors, in the police, in the military, to actually work to defend them all equally. And it seems that both in the events themselves and in the aftermath, there was a deep rupture or erosion of that kind of civic trust that needs to be addressed. And I think the recommendations, to a large extent, address those questions without calling them that, and represent a strong opportunity to move forward toward rebuilding trust in those two dimensions. I wanted especially to look at the recommendations in accountability, under the headings of accountability and under the heading of fighting impunity, because they're what transitional justice is really all about. Because they provide this opportunity to rebuild that trust in some ways, while at the same time being very much in line with international principles as well as international expectations regarding the rights to truth, justice, and reparations when there have been serious violations of human rights. In some ways, reading the report from a transitional justice perspective, some of the most worrisome findings had to do with the aftermath of the events. Beyond the tragicness of the events themselves, the difficulties and in which the institutions have had in dealing with, especially in the area of criminal justice that are reported in the report, are extremely worrisome, because it's an area where trust could be rebuilt if, in fact, the justice system was operating fairly, without bias, in the application of the same law to all of its citizens. And that, at least based on the findings in that area, probably is not the perception of certain communities in the country now. And the experience of ICTJ everywhere is that every effort must be made in the sphere of criminal justice and the application of criminal justice that those proceedings are fair and perceived as fair. So they must be fair, objectively fair, but also an effort be made to make sure that they're perceived as such by the public. And those are challenges, those are somewhat different challenges to be met and to be dealt with. Otherwise, you get a further erosion of a sense that all citizens have the same rights and are equal before the law and also fair and citizens of this. In the area on reparations, I just wanted to make two comments quickly. I think they're very brief recommendations. They leave all of the responsibility really in the hands of the government to come up with a reasonable program. But I think one of the key things around the compensation issue that's not laid out is the importance that it not come across as trying to buy quiet, to purchase people's felicity, to their silence on the issues. And that one of the ways that is effectively be done around monetary compensation is to ensure that the programs really have some very strong component of recognition by the state of their responsibility, whether it be simply a failure to, or the different degrees of responsibility that the state had in the suffering and in the violations that happened to people. That recognition is that acknowledgement of different degrees of responsibility is fundamental for there being some reparative component, even of a compensation program. And finally, I wanted on the reparations issues, it does very briefly, the recommendations very briefly mention the need for symbolic reparations as well. And I think our experience would just say that it is extremely important in terms of actually repairing and healing, but that this is something where the victims will have a very strong point of view as to what that might be. What would be symbolic reparations really needs to come out of broad consultation with the victims themselves to understand what it would be that would symbolize the attempt, the effort by the state to repair some of the damage. And finally, on the Truth Commission, on the truth-seeking issue, I just wanted to say a couple of things. One of in our assessment that we did in May before these events, we felt very strongly that there needed to be a truth commission at that time, or at least that it was something that the society needed to consider. And that was about the cycles of authoritarian government and revolt. This commission, this independent international commission, recommends a truth commission to look into the events of June. And we would probably say that that's too narrow. Our experience is that the Truth Commission is most helpful when events like the June events can be placed in a broader historical context, and where you take the opportunity of a Truth Commission actually to deal with broader issues as well, not only the violations committed in that specific context in that period, but more broadly over a longer period of time, so that other problems that Kyrgyzstan has had with human rights abuses, abuse of authority, problems with torture, systematic torture, oftentimes problems in detention, that these issues could all be examined in a truth commission, and the events of June could be placed in that broader context of violations and abuse of power. And one final thing, to emphasize the difference oftentimes between a truth commission and a commission of inquiry. This would not be one more commission of inquiry, but rather what are the fundamental differences between a normal commission of inquiry and a truth commission is that it opens a public sphere, a public place for victims and others to have their voices heard that are not typically heard. So that new voices become empowered through the process, and the society can build a broader sense of the truth of what has gone, have been the causes and the impacts of the violations that have occurred. I think it's an enormous opportunity that you have to take this report forward and to take steps to go forward on accountability.
Okay, thank you very much, Marcy. Last, but certainly by no means least, Rachel Denver, Human Rights Watch.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate. I really feel honored to be on the same panel with all these distinguished speakers. I just want to make 6 quick points, and I think actually many of them, Marcy, I guess we should have coordinated.
I think many of them are questions of emphasis that points that you've already made. But first, I have to agree with Mira that the fact that this commission was formed and invited, not just formed, but invited to come to Kyrgyzstan and was able to have the access to carry out its work, these are all, and published its report, and the report has been published in Kyrgyzstan. These are obviously, these are very, very positive steps. And Marcy, as you said, it's a really important step because, among other things, it's supposed to promote public debate and discussion. And I can't stop myself from saying that when the Parliament declares the main convener of this report as persona non grata, that really does not help to promote discussion. I really hope that will somehow be addressed. I hope that when you go back to Kyrgyzstan, I know it takes an awful lot of political courage, but that you will face down these allegations that he's stirring up inter-ethnic hatred and all these other things accusations that have been launched against him and against the report. You tell me if I'm going too fast. I know I talk fast. That's not a good step forward. I think it can be addressed. The second point I wanted to make is has to do with a lot of the criticism about the report being unbalanced, and it was a criticism that was in the government's in the government's written response, and it's a criticism that we've seen throughout in the Kyrgyz press. The allegation is that the report favors one side over the other, that it's more about about crimes endured by the Uzbek, by ethnic Uzbeks than by ethnic Kyrgyz, and it's very imbalanced in this way. And I just want to point out one thing, that what's important is every single victim suffering. Each victim. There's no one victim whose suffering means more than another victim's suffering. And the fact that as you mentioned, Michael, the fact that the report makes the conclusion that by the numbers there were more ethnic Uzbek victims of murders and property crimes than ethnic Kyrgyz, that in and of itself is not as important as the fact that every single crime, the author of every single crime needs to be found and there needs to be justice for each victim. And the reason why the proportionality numbers are important is when we look at the criminal justice process that Marcy, that you emphasized, and that also Mr. Mamirov also talked about. And that's where there are some really serious problems that need to be addressed because the criminal justice process is so important. The numbers of the balance of the proportion of ethnic Uzbek victims and ethnic Kyrgyz victims, I think, becomes important in the context of the investigation, where you see that the overwhelming majority of people who have been, who are in custody and who are in and who have been already convicted are almost entirely ethnic Uzbek. I mean, that's something that's made in the a point that's made in the report. It's also in the commission's report. It's also a point that that Human Rights Watch has made and over again. And this is the disbalance that I think that is really important to address. And as Mr. Mamirov said, there is a commitment to there is a commitment to justice, and if there is a commitment to justice, then there needs to be, justice has to be unbiased. And so far, the evidence, all the evidence shows that the justice process is deeply biased, and this needs to be addressed. Also, the second problem in the justice process that Human Rights Watch has documented, and I think that says was also a conclusion of the Kilunin Commission, was that the there have been so many violations, as Mr. Mamirov called the недозволенные методы, illegal methods of interrogation, which is a nice way of saying torture, torture, ill treatment, arbitrary detention. We have, Human Rights Watch documented many cases, many very stark cases of torture of people who were held in the context of the June events. The overwhelming majority of these people who've been tortured are ethnic Uzbeks, because the overwhelming majority of people who've been detained were ethnic Uzbeks. However, you know, I think we would all be foolish not to acknowledge that torture and ill treatment is, unfortunately, it's a long-standing problem in Kyrgyzstan. It's a democratic problem in that ethnic Uzbeks, ethnic Kyrgyz, ethnic Russians. I mean, people. It's a problem that everybody has, I think, in Kyrgyzstan has endured. But in the context of these June events, it takes on a particular character because the overwhelming majority of people who have been subjected to torture and ill treatment are ethnic Uzbeks. So this is what I think, Marcy, maybe what you were talking about. This is one of the factors that undermines trust, and it undermines justice. Because it means that if evidence is being beaten out of people, tortured out of people, then most likely the reliability of that evidence is very low, and that means that the real authors of crimes are not being found, and that means that the real justice for victims is not being served. So these two factors, torture and ill treatment in the investigations, the violence and threats and intimidating atmosphere that was part of that plagued the trials that took place, this particularly towards in the autumn of 2010, that also undermined justice and undermined trust. And this is something that really, it's extremely important that it's not only acknowledged, but it's also addressed, because so far there have been very positive, I think, statements on the part of the new prosecutor general and the part of the president acknowledging that there are problems, but so far some very compelling cases have not been addressed. And one of the glaring ones relates to one of our colleagues, Azimjan Askarov, a human rights defender from the south, who was arrested and was beaten, and whose trial is very, very far from being one that could ever be called fair. So we're really looking for a positive move on his case as well. I guess the fifth point I wanted to make has to do with the whole idea of responsibility. This is another point that you mentioned, Marcy, but I just want to take it in a little different direction. I think that because this is a report that's rather unique in that it lays out specific responsibility for events and attaches names to that responsibility, that's rather unique. I think makes this report in Kyrgyzstan very controversial, especially Dima, as I've heard you say before, because it's happening in the backdrop of a future presidential election. So I think there's it's reasonably people are anxious that this is going to somehow influence the political process. But let's look at why names are named and what the purpose of it is. The purpose isn't this isn't a rap sheet. I mean, it's not a it's not an indictment. It's outlining who has responsibility for what, What actions were they supposed to take? What was in their sphere of jurisdiction? What was their responsibility? And what were they able to do? What did they end up? Which responsibilities were they? Did they end up actually meeting? And I mean, we've heard a lot of critiques of the Kyllönen report that it doesn't adequately acknowledge the degree of chaos that was reigning, and that we should maybe be a little bit more lenient in the criticism of the provisional government of individual actors, and perhaps that's the case. But it's a question of degree, and not of it's a question of degree. It's not an existential question, and I don't think I think it's very important to have a clear idea about who had what responsibility, because this is how. And how those responsibilities were met, because this is how lessons are learned. This is how develop a plan for how to do things differently next time. You look at who was supposed to do what, did they get it done? If not, why not? And how should we do it differently next time? It's part of the whole learning process. The sixth point I wanted to make was that there's been a lot of discussion about the context. Actually, I already said it. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about the context of that in which these events took place, and like you said, Mira, that the degree of the kind of disintegration of the state during that time, I want to pick up here on another point that Marcy made, and that's that I just want to emphasize that there's public debate, and parliamentary debate about the report, and people pick apart the details. It's very easy to pick apart details. We're all going to find faults with the details, but I think we have to really take a couple of steps back and think, do those details that might be right or might be wrong, or they're not emphasized properly, does that really have an impact on the recommendation? Would that change the recommendation any? The government was in a severe, the country was in a state of severe state of chaos, and there was, mob rule. Yeah. Does that change when you look at the recommendations that the commission made? Does that change the recommendations? And I mean, I think that's something that's worth examining. There's more than that. I think there's a lot more that I could say about the recommendations, but I think maybe I'll just stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rachel, and thank you to all presenters. I think there is a great deal to talk about. Unfortunately, we are somewhat limited in time, but I'll do my best to keep things moving to make sure those who wish to speak have the opportunity to do so. I would encourage those sitting behind me, if you maybe want to think about migrating into my field of vision. Otherwise, I might miss you if you want to say something. If not, it's up to you. So a couple of ground rules. If you want to speak, just put your hand up, and I'll note you. When you do speak, I would encourage all those who ask questions to say who you are and where you're from, i.e. what organization you represent. Also, finally, to keep your questions brief, that is to say, as much as possible, brief and to the point, just in the interest of allowing us to capitalize on the time that we do have remaining for discussion. So, with that, who would like to... The floor is open for the first question from the floor. Okay, Masha.
Спасибо большое, Майкл. Спасибо большое за выступление. Мария Лисицына, правовая инициатива открытого общества. У меня два вопроса короткие, длинные. Один, ответ правительства указывает, что уже возбуждены дела по пыткам. Есть ли статистика у вас какая-то, есть ли какие-то... Не указывается никакого числа, да? То есть если в отношении других дел много, то там несколько дел. А есть ли у вас статистика, сколько дел в связи с июньскими событиями возбуждены по пыткам? Возможно ли получить детали об этих делах, на какой стадии, когда они будут в суде, и были ли какие-либо уже приговоры Поэтому и суде этих дел, если те, которые возбуждены не по заявлениям. Потому что то, что мы знаем, естественно, что жертвы очень боятся классически подавать заявления о пытках. То, чего не хватало в приказе генерального исполняющего обязанности генерального прокурора, это то, что прокуратура должна возбуждать дела, если вообще что-то услышали о пытках, даже если нет заявления. Применяется ли это на самом деле, если вы сможете ответить? Мой второй вопрос немножко...
One second, Masha, maybe you could have the first translation, the first question translated. And then...
Oh, sorry.
My name is Maria Bisetina, and I'm the head of the independent organization. And my question has to do with the torture cases. I would like to see if any criminal proceedings have been commenced, regarding the torture cases and torture cases, incidents of torture. I would like to see if you have any data about those cases, if you have any numbers about how many of these prosecutions had been commenced, and also how much data you have regarding to this aspect of June events. And if you have any details, if some of those cases have gone to trial, and also if there any convictions have been made. So I would like to see what kind of data and information you have about this aspect of this June events. And also my sub question is about the first question was about this criminal proceedings or prosecutions that were based on the allegations of the alleged victims of the torture. And my second question is how much data you have, speaking of investigations or prosecutions of cases of torture that have no allegations, because a lot of victims of torture that would not have the courage or they would not have courage to actually come out and say that something like that has happened to them. And my second question is...
Да, и второе, это просто, если можно было бы побольше узнать о планах создания комиссии по примирению. Это будет правительство, как это связано с парламентом, какая механика, как вы думаете обеспечивать участие жертв. Если в этом контексте возможно прокомментировать на ту часть, я понимаю, что вы не представляете парламент, но все же та часть указа, которая говорит генеральному прокурору и Министерству внутренних дел... преследовать каждого, кто распространяет недостоверную информацию о конфликте. То есть, ну, это указ все-таки правительства, то есть какая позиция правительства по данному вопросу, и как вы будете вот балансировать необходимость жертв рассказывать свой опыт и вот этот четкий указ, чтобы никому ни о чем подобном не говорить. I can translate in English. My second question is basically, what will be the mechanics of creating the commission on the reconciliation, who will be doing, what will be the relationship between the government and the parliament, and how will you reconcile the need for the victims to come forward securely with the today's statement of the parliament that the Office of Prosecutor General and of the Minister of Interior should prosecute anyone who publish an untrue information about the events, because like any account can be untrue, and like how basically that was directed towards the government, so if there is a position about it.
Thank you.
Я постараюсь ответить на ваш первый вопрос. Действительно, о пытках говорится очень много. О нем говорят и правозащитники, и международные организации. Но когда дело доходит до возбуждения уголовного дела, к сожалению, лица, в отношении которых по заявлениям правозащитников применялись пытки, отказываются. И это является большой проблемой для возбуждения уголовного дела. Если человек, в отношении которого заявляет о том, что применялись пытки, но этот человек утверждает, что в отношении него никаких пыток не было, то возникает как бы сложность возбуждения уголовного дела. Но тем не менее, наличие каких-либо телесных повреждений, побоев, уже говорит о необходимости проведения превентивных мер. И в этом направлении сейчас... органы госвласти Кыргызстана проводят определенную работу для того, чтобы каких-либо действий в отношении подследственных, подсудимых не было и не было какого-либо физического воздействия.
Well, there is a lot of talk about torture within the international organization, and as for criminal prosecutions of these cases, it's a big challenge because as victims of the torture, they want to talk about these instances of torture. At the same time, the attitude that has been adopted in the communication, in the process of communication with these victims is such as if there was no torture, no complications. And this, in return, complicates the process of criminal prosecutions, of commencing them, of commencing criminal prosecutions. But at the same time, if there are signs of physical harm, of beatings, then of course it becomes an interest to us and all the suspects. Извините, пожалуйста, вторую часть насчет. Да,
вот сказать. А что касается создания комиссии, Маша? Будучи много лет гражданкой нашей страны, ты лучше всех, наверное, знаешь контексты. Да, и в этом смысле как бы вопрос, понятно, что учитывая нынешнюю политическую вот ситуацию, сама конфигурация этой комиссии, она имеет экстремальное значение, да, потому что, во-первых, в стране сейчас очень много людей, которые вообще против создания этой комиссии, потому что люди устали, говорят, хватит уже нас препарировать. Мы больше не хотим быть препарированными. Но, тем не менее, политическая воля есть для того, чтобы все-таки продолжить этот процесс и именно в сторону выполнения рекомендаций. И в этом смысле возникает...
Мира, может, секундочку, чтобы это...
So as for the commission, first of all, Masha, you know, since you have been the citizen of the country for many years, you know about the complexity of political situation. And yes, the configuration of this commission is a kind of a matter of extreme importance. How this the structure of this commission? A lot of people. A lot of people oppose the commencement of this commission, the organization of this commission. A lot of people feel that they no longer want to be analyzed in this sense. They don't want to be under a microscope in this regard. And so a lot of people oppose this commission because they feel that they've had enough.
Следующий вопрос, который возникает: при каком ключевом государственном органе эта комиссия должна быть?
The second question that comes up in this context is that what kind of governmental institution would house this kind of commission?
Возникает большое искушение сделать это при институте президента традиционно, но так как это человек, который привержен правам человека и, так сказать, есть уверенность в том, что это будет приоритетной темой, но в октябре выборы.
Well, there
is a как дальше, какой президент придет сейчас, никто, наверное, не скажет. Поэтому возникает как бы вопрос, может быть, эффективнее при правительстве. Вот мы как раз находимся в этой фазе дискуссии в стране.
There is a temptation to build this commission along the president as a part of presidential institution, and of course we know about the commitment of the president to the issues of human rights and to human rights. But we have to keep in mind that in October the presidential election will take place, and we do not know who the next president is going to be.
Очевидно то, что активное участие будет принимать в работе парламент, потому что мы парламентская республика, и без их участия мы не можем не предпринимать важных решений каких-то. Для парламента эта работа тоже будет определенным вызовом и таким, скажем так, уроком, да, потому что это на самом деле будет непросто договариваться, искать компромиссы и реальные методы улучшения ситуации. Не просто разболтать, а, скажем так, реально что-то сделать для жертв, для тех людей, кто пострадал.
And the active participation of Parliament will take place as well because we are a parliamentary republic, and so no decisions can be made without a participation of Parliament. And also, it would be good for Parliament in terms of learning lessons and drawing conclusions. And it's also very important that it's not just all about talk, but it's also about actual actions, actually doing things instead of just talking about them. And in terms of reparations towards the victims.
В этом смысле заявление парламента о том, что будут преследоваться тех, кто распространяет слухи или дает какие-то показания, оно должно быть, конечно, тщательно, скажем так, изучено и проработано внутри страны. И я думаю, что в этом контексте действительно с таким политическим настроением кого-то из жертв вызывать и пытаться их спрашивать, это, наверное, античеловечно, да? Поэтому я думаю, что форматы работы комиссии будут уточняться сейчас. Мы попросили помощи у Верховного комиссара ООН по правам человека дать нам информацию о том, какие существовали успешные и неуспешные кейсы работы таких комиссий в других странах, где были такие исследования. И вот по возвращении домой мы хотели как раз вместе с ними попытаться помоделировать, какая, учитывая нашу политическую ситуацию и структуру власти, как мы могли бы это сделать наиболее эффективно.
Statements made by Parliament that has to do with the gossip or that is taking place, circulating, or about people that testify about the events, and so all of this have to be developed. Has to be developed in the country, and to expect these people in this in the current political situation to expect them to come out and testify can be somewhat unreasonable. And so we asked the chief commissioner of the United Nations human rights organizations to share his successful experiences while working in a similar context with different reports and other inquiries. And so we would like to, upon our arrival at home, we would like to develop a model that would be based also on this experience and successful findings of this chief commissioner of the United Nations Human Rights Organization.
Okay. Thank you. I have Alex and then Muzaffar.
Alex Cooley. I teach at Columbia University. I just want to make a brief comment, and perhaps you can comment on it, perhaps not. And that's to do with this phrase that I hear in the discussion here, and also that I see in statements by Kyrgyz officials and in the press regarding the difficult political situation that you are in at the moment. This is a political climate of experimentation, again, with democracy. It's an experiment that a lot of us here wish you all the best with, and really you have our support. What you're trying to do is really extraordinary, and already we've seen two sets of uprisings and attempts to reconstitute the political fabric. All of these things are very difficult. At the same time, it's a climate that seems very, in the uncertainty and the experimentation, is very conducive to nationalist appeals. And I will join some of my colleagues here in just reiterating, I think, how unhelpful this statement by the Parliament has been regarding sort of persons being non grata because of what they write or what they publish and so forth. This is exactly the direction that Kyrgyz nationalism needs to avoid. And, you know, far be it for me to lecture to you about nationalism and destructive consequences, but I think we all need to be mindful that exactly because we are in a presidential campaign, exactly because issues of sovereignty, issues of the international community may be used and abused, it's important whenever we get the opportunity to try and respond to those. Because ultimately, I think Kyrgyzstan's friends and advocates, and we're all part of them here, we want Kyrgyzstan to succeed. And so for us, a tolerant Kyrgyzstan, one that really tries to be exceptional and a new model in the region, is what we want to support. So, I think it's incumbent whenever you can to try and push back and take that the political context is for granted. It's not. I think you can work to confront some of these forces.
Thank you, Alex. So any comments or responses to Alex's question from the delegation?
По этому поводу хотел пару слов сказать. Вы знаете, это самое, действительно, вы очень правильно сказали, что была поддержана в Центральноазиатском регионе именно парламентское правление Кыргызстане, и мы очень этому довольны сегодня. Почему? Потому что сегодня есть, значит, свобода слова в Кыргызстане. Она обсуждается бурно в парламенте. Они бы какое слово не говорили бы, но мы, я так думаю, придем с правительством, с администрацией президента одному единому решению. И это будет единое решение, которое будет урегулировать и будет способствовать тому, что мир и межнациональное согласие будет в Кыргызстане.
Well, you're very correct about saying that parliamentary governance, you're very correct in what you just said. Parliamentary governance had been supported, very, very happy about this structure of a government that is parliamentary based, where freedom of speech is one of this important aspects. And whatever they say, we, along with presidential institutions, along with governmental institutions, we would like to come to one decision, and that decision would regulate and promote peacefulness as well of reconciliation and general state of peace.
Okay. All right, if there are no other responses, then Muzaffar.
Добрый день. Меня зовут Музафар Сулейманов. Я сотрудник Евразийской программы Комитета по защите журналистов здесь, в Нью-Йорке. Спасибо вам большое за презентацию. И вам, господин Сабиров, как раз-таки вот вы сказали, отметили о свободе слова в Кыргызстане. Хотелось бы спросить, вот как раз моя коллега Рэйчел Дэмил подняла вопрос о правозащитнике, о журналисте, о Азимжоне Аскарове, которого в прошлом году, как вам, наверное, известно, приговорили к пожизненному заключению в Кыргызстане. Хотелось бы узнать, планирует ли правительство и президент вообще каким-то образом обратить внимание на данное такое явное ущемление свободы слова в Кыргызстане, явное ущемление прав человека. Также хотелось бы господину Мамырову задать вопрос. Вот вы сказали, что все факты, где имеются следы пыток и избиения задержанных, будут исследованы или уже проводятся исследования. В интернете были фотографии правозащитника Азимжона Аскарова, сделанные в следственном изоляторе в Базар-Кургоне со следами побоев. Хотелось бы узнать, проводилось расследование его пыток в заключении. И также, раз мы говорим о свободе слова и о журналистике, хотелось бы узнать, планируется и известно ли правительству о том, что два телеканала узбекоязычных, ваши Оштовы и Мезонтовы, прекратили вещание на узбекском языке, а Мезонтовы, насколько нам известно, прекратил вообще свое существование, а Оштовы был фактически отобран местными властями у своего законного владельца. И сейчас оба владельца, Мезонтовы и Оштовы, Халил Худайбердиев и Джалол Мирзахаджаев, насколько нам известно, подвергнуты уголовному преследованию в Кыргызстане. Хотелось бы узнать вот ваши комментарии по всем этим вопросам. Спасибо вам большое.
Well, I represent Central Asian Committee of Protection of Journalists in New York, and I would like to go back to what you just said about freedom of speech. The case of Orenjon Oshkarov, the human rights activist that was sentenced to life in Kyrgyzstan, I would like to ask you if you plan to pay attention to the attack against freedom of speech and journalists, and what you how you plan on doing this, and if this such incidents will be looked at and reviewed. And my second question is
regarding the status of Uzbek language broadcasters in the south of Kyrgyzstan, Oshtove and Mezontove, which factually stopped transmitting their broadcasts in Uzbek language. And the directors, Halil Hudaybardiev and Javlon Mirzakhodjaev, had to flee Kyrgyzstan, and now they're under criminal prosecution.
Относительно пыток в отношении Азимжана Аскарова, Об этом очень много писалось в международных средствах массовой информации, заявлялось правозащитными организациями, это передавалось и международными организациями, в связи с чем дело, которое расследовалось по Азимжану Аскарову, было взято под личный контроль президента. И факты побоев также исследовались, в связи с чем, когда, почему были нанесены эти телесные повреждения. Было проведено медицинское освидетельствование. Казимджан Аскарову имел беспрепятственный доступ и омбудсмен, который не раз встречался с Азимджаном Аскаровым.
The incidents of the case of torture against Orenjon Oskarov, it was covered by media, by international media, as well as organizations, human rights organizations. And the case of Orenjon Oskarov was taken under personal control of president. So president is personally has taken this case into her hands. And everything was reviewed and medical examination of Orenjon Oskarov took place, and all of the incidents of physical abuse, physical violations that had taken place, was also were also reviewed and documented.
Ему также имели беспрепятственный доступ и его адвокат Загвалиев и Тахтаконов.
And also we had an unlimited access to this to his attorney, attorneys whose names are.
Загивалиев и Тактаконов.
Загивалиев и Тактаконов.
В ходе проверки факта избиения, к сожалению, Азимжан Аскаров сам отказался от того, что его кто-либо из сотрудников правоохранительных органов избивал или применял к нему недозволенные методы.
In the process of investigating the fact of beatings and unlawful actions acts committed against Mr. Orenjon Oskarov, unfortunately, Mr. Oskarov himself he backed on what he said about beatings, physical harm, or any kind of unlawful methods or detention.
И опять же, ранее я отвечал, поскольку если он сам отказывается от того, что к нему применяли какие-либо пытки или истязания со стороны сотрудников правоохранительных органов, то в отношении сотрудников правоохранительных органов не возбуждались уголовные дела по факту пытки или истязания. Относительно второй части вашего вопроса.
Секундочку, чтобы успели переводить.
As I mentioned earlier, since Mr. Oskarov himself he took back his testimony about any kind of criminal activity against him or beatings, because of that, no criminal investigation or prosecution was commenced.
Дело, проведенное в отношении Азимжана Аскарова, вызывает, конечно, двойственное ощущение, и многие международные организации считают его несправедливым, и Аскаров как потерпевший, как незаслуженно осужденный.
And because this case of the case of Orenjon Oskarov is a case of ambivalent nature, and it had drawn a lot of attention, international attention.
Мы должны понимать, что расследование было проведено следственными органами, и в ходе этого расследования получили подтверждение факты совершения преступления Азимжаном Аскаровым.
And so law enforcement made the investigation, commenced the investigation of Orenjon Oskarov's actions, and so this investigation took place.
Конечно, мы можем оспаривать, не соглашаться, но, к сожалению, это имело место. И человек, занимающийся правоохранительным органом, возможно, не гарантирован от того, что может когда-то преступить закон.
Of course, we can disagree with this and not acknowledge this, but it doesn't mean that someone who represents a law enforcement agencies cannot step over the line of law and not break it.
Я здесь хотел добавить, вы очень хороший вопрос задали по свободе слова. Вам всем известно, Кыргызстан является центральноазиатским регионом, демократическим островком, вот так если сказать. Действительно, свобода слова существует, но вы знаете, то, что по отношению Мезонтова и Оштова, все, если вот так рассмотреть, все от этого и началось. Если вы точно хронологию посмотрите, там были призывы Кадыржана Батырова, чтобы этнические узбеки активно влились в политическую жизнь Кыргызстана.
So we all know that Kyrgyzstan is a democratic, if you will, a democratic island in Central Asian region. Freedom of speech does exist. As for Mezonov and Osh, if we look at the chronology of the events, we will see that the participation, political participation of Uzbekis was encouraged and it did take place.
Rachel, did you have a comment to that?
Say a couple more words about Azimjan, because in fact Azimjan has filed a complaint on torture. I think he has made public statements that back in December, right? He said publicly that when he was still in custody in the south in Bazar Korgon, he did say that he didn't want to file any complaints. He said that the bruises were received from fighting with inmates or other inmates, but that he had to say that because he was under a tremendous pressure. I mean, we have to remember that he was being held in an extremely hostile atmosphere, and that he only felt free to talk about what had actually happened to him after his trial was over and after he was transferred to Bishkek. So I think these are really important factors to bear in mind, and that he has in fact filed a torture complaint. And Masha just gave me the page from the Kirunin report. Is it the Kirunin report?
No, it's our.
Oh, sorry, it's.
Yeah, make sure it's turned on.
Что его избил, что он типа подрался с сокамерником. Ну, на самом деле, по стандартам прав человека, государство и в таком случае должно проводить полноценное расследование. Но даже не говоря о этом, если можно, я заберу бумажку. После того, как он был переведен, он полностью описал все пытки, которым он был подвергнут. Это было и в публичной сфере, и есть у всех. Его адвокат Нурбек Тактагунов 15 марта подал очень детальную жалобу о пытках. Ему был дан ответ в форме письма, то есть непроцессуального документа, который невозможно обжаловать. Нурбек обжаловал этот факт процессуального нарушения, и 4 апреля... Я сейчас дату не могу найти. И суд признал, что этот ответ был неправильный, и сейчас никакого решения по этой жалобе. Снова эта жалоба в Генеральной прокуратуре, есть ссылка на приказ. И после 15 апреля нету ничего, никакого развития по поводу его жалобы. Но это не совсем так, что Азимжан отказался. Он все очень детально описал, и эта жалоба до сих пор в Генеральной прокуратуре без какого-либо процессуального ответа.
Well, the initiative was to look at his complaint of Orenjana and to look... Azerbaijan to look at this complaint and to take it to the United Nations Human Rights Committee. And on his behalf, this complaint was issued about torture and photos of this physical harm that had been done to him. And he was forced to say that he had a fight. The way that he came about attaining this physical harm was because he had a fight with other prisoners that were his neighbors in his prison cell. And after he was transferred, he described everything that happened, as well as his attorney.
То, что вы сказали, для нас является новостью, и по приезду, конечно же, мы выясним, действительно ли это заявление обжаловало в суде, и после обжалования заявление было подано в Генеральную прокуратуру, и в Генеральной прокуратуре в связи с чем на эту жалобу нет ответа, поскольку по закону любое заявление или жалоба должна быть рассмотрена в течение месяца.
Well, all of this comes as news to us, and when we come back, we will definitely look at this issue, and if there has been a judicial review, and as well as the procuracy, if it reviewed this case as well, because by law, every such case has to be reviewed and has to be reviewed.
В исключительных случаях этот месячный срок может быть продлен.
Повторить? Продлить?
And in some exceptional cases, as an exception, this kind of time period of detention can be more than 1 month.
По поводу Аскарова и по поводу, продолжая тему ОШТВ и Мизонтовой, по поводу Аскарова, вам вообще известно, какие следственные органы проводили расследование факта преступления Азимжаном Аскаровым? Насколько нам известно, и сообщения в прессе, и сообщения правозащитников, с кем мы общались, следственные органы были Джалабадская прокуратура и тот самый Базаркургонский РОВД, в котором он содержался. То есть те самые органы, кого Азимжан Аскаров обвинял в пытках и о ком он писал в своих отчетах. То есть тут наблюдается явный конфликт интересов. Если правозащитник и журналист обвиняет кого-то, обличает кого-то в своих заявлениях, насколько я понимаю, в правовом государстве не может быть, те органы не могут допуститься к расследованию преступления, якобы совершенных данным человеком. По поводу Оштовы и Мизонтовы...
As for Oskarov and Mezontov, I would like to say that criminal investigation was conducted by the agency, by those law enforcement or criminal agencies that actually he had spoken against. So we know that from the media and from our data, we know that the agency that was actually conducting this investigation regarding his case was those agencies, those criminal investigation agencies that he actually had spoken against and spoken about. And so there is obviously a very major conflict of interest. And if a person speaks against an agency, this agency cannot in a rightful kind of government with the right approach, this very agency cannot actually conduct the investigation of this person's claim.
По поводу Оштовой и Мизонтовой, я знакомился с отчетом. В котором говорится, что Оштова и Мизонтова передало митинг, на котором господин Батыров высказывался и призывал узбеков быть активными в политике. Насколько я понимаю, вы сами, господин Сабиров, отметили, что Кыргызстан является демократической республикой, где представители нацменьшинств присутствуют в парламенте. То есть такое заявление господина Батырова, я думаю, соответствует как раз-таки той логике, которую вы сами высказали ранее. Также, если хотелось бы узнать, является ли преступлением в Кыргызстане то, что журналисты передают репортаж о каком-то событии, которым они считают важным и значимым для политической жизни и политической и социальной жизни страны. И хотелось бы узнать, вы знакомы с ли правительство и Генеральной прокуратуры Кыргызстана при возбуждении уголовного дела в отношении господина Худайбердиева и Мирзахаджаева с той видеозаписью, которую транслировал ОШ ТВ и Мизон ТВ. Насколько нам известно, там присутствует на том митинге присутствовал губернатор Джалабадской области Бектур Асанов. Возбудили ли про него в отношении него уголовное дело? Спасибо. I can translate it myself if you want. The question is regarding ОШ ТВ и Мизон ТВ. As Mr. Sabirov mentioned, everything started from them actually reporting on the protest in Jalalabad, where leader of Uzbek minority, Mr. Batirov, called on the ethnic Uzbeks to participate in political life of Kyrgyzstan. And Mr. Sabirov himself, when he made an opening statement, said that Kyrgyzstan is a democratic country where ethnic minorities are represented in the parliament. And Mr. Sabirov is himself is an ethnic Tajik. So the question is it a crime in Kyrgyzstan for journalists to report on an event which they see having social and political value, like the protest which had taken place in Jalalabad? And the second part of the question is if General Prosecutor's Office and the parliament and the government of Kyrgyzstan had seen that report. As far as we know, current governor of Jalalabad region, Bektur Asanov, actually himself was present at this protest. And the question is he being criminally prosecuted along with the journalists themselves? Thank you.
Я отвечу господину Сулейманов. Вы задали вопрос, кто расследует уголовные дела, и в отношении, кто расследовал уголовное дело в отношении Азимжана Аскарова.
I will answer your
question. И в Узбекистане, и в Кыргызстане, и во всех постсоветских странах есть процессуальное законодательство, которое определяет порядок расследования уголовных дел.
Mr. Sulaymanov, I will answer your question about who investigates this case. In Kyrgyzstan and other former Soviet Union countries, there are specially assigned proceedings and structure of those proceedings that investigate this case.
Согласно процессуального законодательства, расследование преступлений проводят именно те следственные органы, на территории которого совершено уголовное преступление. Поэтому дело в отношении Азимжана Аскарова расследовалось Басакогонским следственными органами.
According to the procedural structure, the structure of proceedings and the law of proceedings that is in place, is that those agencies, those judicial agencies, are the ones who are in charge of these investigations that actually are on the territory where the claim is being where the claim has originated.
Что касается второй части вопроса, я попробую не то чтобы ответить, а может быть как-то попытаться прокомментировать сам вопрос и тон, которым он задан. Да, Кыргызстан – демократическая страна. И этому подтверждение является то, что в местах компактного проживания этнических меньшинств, в том числе узбеков, одновременно существовали, могли существовать два телеканала на языке этнических меньшинств. И это действительно было, продолжалось очень долго. И также факт, что 236 школ с узбекским языком обучения, 99 школ с совместными языками обучения киргизского и узбекским существовали и существуют до сих пор. 63 учебника, наименования, вида учебника, издано Кыргызской Республикой из государственного бюджета на узбекском языке обучения. Все эти факты свидетельствуют о том, что вплоть до конфликта права этнических меньшинств в местах компактного проживания соблюдались неукоснительно, и государство тратило огромные ресурсы на поддержание этого права человека.
Мир, секундочку.
I would like to make a comment on the second part of your question, and the comment is such is that yes, Kyrgyzstan is a democratic country, and if we're talking about those regions that have this compact population of ethnic minorities, such as Uzbeki ethnic minorities. I'd like to say that yes, there are two TV channels that operate a broadcast in the language of ethnic minorities, which is Uzbeki language. And so I would also like to mention this number: 236 schools or educational establishments that conduct their studies in Uzbeki language. And there are 96 educational establishments that institutions that conduct their teaching in combined Uzbeki and Kyrgyz language. Also, 63 textbooks have been published and in Uzbeki language, and it was sponsored by the government. So before the conflict that took place, rights of ethnic minorities, they were respected and they were sponsored by governmental funding.
В самих заявлениях Батырова в том, что представители какой-либо группы должны активно участвовать в политической жизни, нет ничего незаконного. И это абсолютно понятно всем. Но опять же, в той ситуации, которая сложилась в тот момент на этой территории, неоднократные заявления о политической, в том числе, активизации. И, кстати, о том, что это было совершенно законно, свидетельствует как раз тот факт, что тогдашний губернатор был там, и в этом ничего страшного нет. Но
если можно.
Batyrov, as for the statement made by Mr. Batyrov about these ethnic groups, they have to participate in political life. There's nothing unlawful about that statement made by him. But current situation of political activization and governor himself was there.
То есть как раз-таки то, что там был Асанов, это говорит о том, что это было совершенно легальное собрание, и к нему все нормально относились. Другой вопрос, что в той накаленной ситуации, когда практически каждый день происходили митинги, захваты административных зданий, когда было произведено сожжение родовых домов Бакиевых, и когда всем было очевидно, что политический конфликт начинает трансформироваться в этнический, ответственность лидеров этнических сообществ должна быть очевидна. И теперь где Батыров и где, к сожалению, руководители этих телевизионных каналов? Батыров прекрасненько убежал, да? Но теперь возникает большая проблема, связанная с тем, что необходимо в этой постконфликтной ситуации постепенно это восстанавливать. И это работа нашего государства, которое, в общем-то, на самом деле всегда придерживалось этих демократических традиций. Поэтому я вас очень прошу быть поосторожнее. Сейчас мы в очень таком тяжелом состоянии находимся, в том смысле, что телевидение на языках меньшинств будет восстановлено, но это сейчас вопрос времени. Мы не можем вот в этот период сейчас кавалерийской атакой возвращать все на свое место так, как было раньше. Мы этого хотим, но это вопрос времени.
As for Asanov, who attended this event, it means it was a legitimate meeting, and everyone was fine, felt fine about it. And so now we're talking about all these events and the conflict and the seizure of establishments, of burning and seizure of establishments, as well as burning of family. Houses. And so what we saw was that the political conflict was transformed into ethnical conflict. And now we're talking about these leaders and these TV channels. Where are they now? Batir, for instance, he fled, and other leaders are not speaking out. They're not talking about the situation. So we have to be careful when we're addressing these issues. And as for these TV channels, this television mm-hmm. that was operating in Uzbeki language, yes, we wanted for it to be restored, but not in the context of this situation, not right now. But it's the goal, but it will require more time.
Okay, thank you very much. We are, speaking of time, we are ourselves somewhat over the allotted time for this event. I want to thank everyone for staying as long as they have. I would, and I'm very sorry to bring things to a close, as there's obviously a great deal more to discuss. But perhaps if the panelists, if any of the panelists have any concluding remarks, I would stress maybe 1 minute, if any of you have anything to say in conclusion before we wrap up for today.
Да, послу, да? Может быть, вам? Да, ну, давайте попробуем как-то вот обобщить это так, что действительно очень непростая ситуация, и, к сожалению, вот этот трансформированный конфликт, он вот то, что произошло, трансформация из политического в этнический конфликт, оно вот, к сожалению, ухудшило положение меньшинства. Это факт. Но это означает, что теперь нам приходится начинать с гораздо более худших позиций, чем мы находились до конфликта. И это жаль. Но тем не менее, Кыргызстан всегда был привержен и будет привержен идеям как раз-таки равных возможностей, потому что никто не может отменить того факта, что Кыргызстан до сих пор остается единственной страной постсоветского пространства, где есть такой высокий уровень защиты прав, права на родной язык и законодательная квота для меньшинств. Если вы найдете хоть одну страну, в которой есть квоты в парламент для людей из других групп, как у нас, или если вы найдете в другой соседней стране квоту 10% в академию милиции, как у нас она действует 4 последних года, тогда, может быть, я смогу принять какие-то возражения. Но сейчас пока, к сожалению, несмотря на этот конфликт и на его страшные последствия, мы твердо будем идти по пути равных прав и возможностей для всех граждан страны.
Let's try to summarize what has been discussed. It's not an easy situation, and this transformation of the conflict, that from being political, it has been modified into ethnical. So transferred from being political to being ethnical, and so this transformation that had taken place has worsened the situation of ethnical minorities. Still, Kyrgyzstan has always been committed to the ideal of equal opportunity, and also let's not forget the fact that Kyrgyzstan is the only country out of all the countries of the former Soviet Union that protect the principle of language identity of minorities. And let's not forget a lot of data, a lot of quotas. For instance, there is a 10% quota in a police academy. Let's not forget these numbers. And this conflict, regardless of this conflict, our government and our country are committed to the principle of equality and respect of different groups.
Mr. Ambassador.
I will speak in English in order to be very short, not to keep long time. So, first of all, I would like to, as ambassador of Kyrgyzstan here in the United States, I thank you very much for all of you on interesting of our briefings. This was actually my idea to bring our delegation here to the United States in order that we will be able in this very sensitive and difficult time to speak to the expert community on and to explain about our story, except what we received, the story and the conclusion by the International Inquiry Commission. And the general comments, of course, of the government that we accept the recommendations of the commission, and we are establishing the commission to work in order to move forward. We are not just ignoring, but we are accepting, and we want to, that we will have also our story, how was difficult time we faced at that time, in order to follow up with this stabilization process. And I very much understand how you're concerned about the Askarov's case. I was in Kyrgyzstan at that time. I was under the pressure on the Askarov case, and I was every day in contact with his advocate, Mr. Toktakunov. Mm-hmm. And you also know, and the president was every day asking me, please contact to the advocate of Mr. Toktakunov in order to follow up and securely to move his case to the capital, Bishkek. And I was actually involved in this process, and it was not easy process. How I met with people who was just want to kill themselves, mm-hmm. in order that they not to allow Mr. Takhtakonov to move to the capital of Bishkek, mm-hmm. and it was very difficult. And I think this case should be, of course, what we have discussed. We have other panels and discussions. We have other commissions and committees to discuss the case of the Askarov. But I think that government knows, and we also understand the concerns, and we have another people who also concerns about the Askarov case, which is the parents of victims. They have also their own information about this case. And I think that finally the president is also aware about and is taking under the control that the truth about the Askarov's case will be taking place. And finally, I would like to thank you also for my delegation here, that it was not an easy visit to the United States with the meeting with experts, and it was really very difficult to us to talk at the difficult for us. We had about 15 bilateral meetings and round tables, and it was really very, very difficult. And then I hope this was useful both for the expert community and for Kyrgyz side. Thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Ambassador.
Just two words. Finally, I would like just to give the word to our head of our delegation from Kyrgyzstan, but I would like just express deep gratitude to the Open Society, which helped to organize this very important and mutually, I think, interesting meeting. But I would like also to thank and express deep gratitude to all of you who participated actively in this discussion. And I think we'll take certain decisions and further steps on it. But I would like to call for all of you, just let's jointly together, international agencies, civil society, governmental structures, on the recommendations so that to bring to Kyrgyzstan peace, security, stability, and that we could follow the principles of the human protection and human rights.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, everybody.